I hate crime. Crime is my business. It's also my hobby. I subscribe to a clipping service in town. Anything related to crime is sent to me. Then I scan the clippings and file them away. One such clipping, a week or so old, told of a guy who was found floating in Paddy's Channel at Woy Woy. He was floating face down, of course. His name was Pete Miller. The reason I mention all this is because that was why she came to see me. Her name was Ruth.
Peter was my brother.
Uh-huh.
According to the newspaper account, it was accidental death.
Only according?
Yes.
Why?
It was impossible for my brother to drown.
How come?
He was an excellent swimmer.
Then you think there was funny business, huh?
Exactly.
Tell me more.
Peter went to Woy Woy and bought a cottage a few months ago. Before that, he'd been in Adelaide for some years, as a matter of fact.
Go on.
I never found out what he'd been doing in Adelaide. I didn't even know he'd gone to Woy Woy.
But you just said...
The police told me about Peter buying the cottage.
Then he never contacted you?
No.
And you know nothing about what he did for the last few years?
No.
Then how come you'd be so sure it was murder?
Firstly, as I told you, Peter was a fine swimmer. Secondly, it's a feeling I have.
Woman's intuition, huh?
Yes.
If I take this case, Miss Millie, your intuition is going to cost you money.
How much money?
£10 a day plus expenses.
Very well.
She peeled off 10 fivers as a retainer, left her address and phone number. I packed a bag and went to Woy Woy. White Sails Guest House is right near the water. It's run by a guy named Bill Howard, who's run by his wife. Pete Miller, I discovered, had lived a few houses down.
He was a very quiet fellow, Larry.
Did you have anything at all to do with him?
Oh, we just said good morning to each other. That's about all.
Was he palsy with anyone?
No, he always seemed to be alone. He spent a lot of time fishing.
He was supposed to have fallen in while fishing, wasn't he?
That's what the police said.
Uh-huh.
Hey, you going to do some fishing yourself?
Maybe.
Well, listen, if you do, you go out in the weed flats and you get some cockles. It's the only thing the brim are biting on.
I changed, went to the boat shed. The young blonde kid down there knew me, too.
How you going, Larry?
Okay, pal.
Gonna give the brim a go?
I might.
Well, take a tip from me. Use mullet fillets for bait. Only thing the brim are biting on.
Well, thanks for the information.
Want a boat?
Later, maybe. First, did you know Pete Miller?
Cobra was drowned?
Yeah.
Well, he had one of our launches when he fell in. He's a quiet bloke. Never did much talking.
What happened to the launch?
Well, that's how we knew something was wrong. He didn't come back with the launch. So next morning, I sort of cruised around and found the launch halfway to Gosford. Empty.
Then?
Well, I reported to the coppers. Then he was found floating in Paddy's Channel. Just in time, too. Another day and the prawns would have been at him.
Yeah. Where did he usually fish?
Oh, over by Cockle Creek, mainly. Used to do all right, too.
Well, thanks, pal. I'll be back later for that boat.
Okay, Larry.
I went to both Woy Woy hotels and got their guests lists for the few nights before Pete Miller swallowed too much water. Then I went to the boarding houses. I concentrated on males. Most of them were regulars and well known to the hotel and boarding house keepers, so I crossed them off. And was left with 11 names. I went back to the boat shed. 6 of the men on the list had hired boats. I crossed the others off. 5 of the remaining 6 came from Sydney. I phoned an investigator friend there and he checked. They were okay. That left me with one man, a guy named Smith. I went back to the boat shed.
Yeah, we rented a boat to a cove named Smith. Yeah, for a week.
According to the hotel where he stayed, there was a guy named Atkinson with him.
Well, there was a bloke who went fishing with him, but Didn't ask his name. We only take the name of the bloke what hires the boat.
Uh-huh. Where did they usually fish?
Just over to the left there. About 50 yards up.
And Pete Miller, to get to Cockle Creek, had to go to the right, huh?
Yeah.
Did they ever follow him?
Well, I never noticed.
Okay. I'll take that launch now.
G'day, Yank. I'll get it set up for you.
I spent the next hour cruising around. Conkle Creek ran between two small islands. One had a cottage on it. On the other island, there were a few horses running around and nothing else. I looked over every square inch of the second island. Near the center, I found a squarish hole in the ground with a mound of earth heaped near it. I went back to Sydney that night and used my file clippings again. 10 days before, which was the day before Miller's death, it was reported that a bank at Gosford had collected 3 5-pound notes that were part of a kidnap ransom. They weren't marked bills, but the serial numbers had been copied down before the ransom was paid. I got the whole story from Inspector Daniels.
Yeah, 3.5 years ago, before you arrived in Australia, a 7-year-old boy was kidnapped in Adelaide.
Adelaide?
Yeah.
Go on, Inspector.
His parents, named Cromwell, were very wealthy. They paid the ransom demanded, but had the serial number of each bill listed at the bank.
Uh-huh.
The money was then left where the kidnappers wanted it, but the boy was never returned. The next day, the Cromwells notified the police. Search was made, and a month later, the remains of the boy were found in the bush.
They'd killed the kid?
Coroner's report said death was due to a fractured skull, either by an accidental fall or a blunt instrument.
Well, either way, it amounts to murder. But those bills, Inspector?
A few £100 was passed in Adelaide. Then £2,000 worth was passed at a Melbourne racecourse about a month later. Before that, of course, a list of the serial numbers was given to each bank.
But the kidnappers probably got wind of it, huh?
Yes. That's why they got rid of some of the money on the racecourse. Bookmakers' clerks haven't got time to study serial numbers.
Well, how much was the total ransom?
£20,000. All right, Kent. Now, tell me why you're so interested.
Right now, I can't tell you, sweetheart. But I'll see you later. I went to Newcastle. Why? At the Woy Woy Hotel, Smith and his buddy Atkinson had given a Newcastle address as their home. But when I checked, no one had ever heard of either Smith or Atkinson. Now I knew I was on the right track. I went back to headquarters in Sydney.
Rogues gallery?
Yeah. Have you got a complete one? Pictures of all known criminals in Australia.
Of course we have.
Including Adelaide.
All over Australia.
Fine. I'd like to bring somebody here to have a look at them.
Who?
I told him. The kid at the Woy Woy boat shed. He said, okay. I phoned the boat shed and offered the kid a fiver for his trouble. He came down on the next train. We spent an hour over the photos, then he pointed to one.
That's Smith?
Sure of it.
Positive. I never forget the face of a bloke we are about to.
We kept him looking through, but he couldn't find a picture of the other fellow, Atkinson. So, we let him go back to Woy Woy, and then the inspector and I chewed it over.
This character identified. Name isn't Smith.
Naturally. It was a phony. What is his name?
Marlow. Mike Marlow.
Record?
2 sentences for breaking and entering, 1 for armed robbery.
And a kidnapping that he got away with, so far.
Makes you so sure of that?
Well, it's obvious. 3.5 years ago, Pete Miller was in Adelaide when the Cromwell kid was kidnapped. Then a little over a week ago, Miller drowned.
So?
So his sister says Miller was a good swimmer. On top of that, Marlow, alias Smith, and another buddy, unknown, were at Woy Woy. At the same time, Miller slipped over the side.
What does that prove?
They gave a fake Newcastle address. Why should they lie about that if they were just in Woy Woy on a fishing trip?
Is there any more to your theory?
I looked over an island up there, near where Miller did his fishing.
And?
I found a hole in the ground.
Which once contained?
The way I figure it, what was left of the ransom money.
Go on.
I figured that Miller had the money when he went to Woy Woy. That might explain why he didn't contact his sister. Maybe he skipped out on his partners, thinking he'd be safe in Woy Woy. In other words, he pulled a swifty on them.
Possible.
Okay. He's got the dough, but it's hot. So he hides it in the island. Then he buys the cottage with cool money, but he runs out of it. He needs some dough. Goes out to the island, takes some fivers, passes them at or near Gosford.
The ones collected by the bank?
Yeah. Then his buddies finally catch up with him, but they keep out of his sight. They wait till he goes over to the island. They follow, catch him there, find the money, choke him, toss him in the water, push his boat free and blow.
Where?
Where would you say?
Well, Adelaide.
And that's just where I'm going. Before I hopped a plane for Adelaide, Inspector Daniels and I came to an agreement. He'd give me 48 hours, and then the police force would do all the worrying about Marlowe, alias Smith, and his buddy. I had a copy of the police photo of Marlowe in my pocket. As soon as I got to Adelaide, I checked in a hotel and headed for the city's underworld. Adelaide's underworld isn't big, but it's there, just like it is in any city. I went to all the dives, showing my picture of Marlowe and saying that I wanted to see him, without giving any reason why. 24 of my 48 hours passed without anything happening. Then on the second day, I was in the public bar of the King's Arms Hotel. A little skinny-faced guy with a rabbit nose sidled up to me. He nudged me with his elbow and talked out of the corner of his mouth.
Yeah, pal. Been showing a picture around, ain't you?
That's right.
Somebody was telling me it's a picture of Mike Marlowe.
Do you know Marlowe?
Maybe.
And maybe you can tell me where I'll find him.
Well, that's according.
To what?
To how much, like, the information might be worth to you.
A tenner?
Sounds like you don't want to seem too bad.
A tenner for telling me where I'll find him? Another tenner if I do find him.
How do I know I'll get the second tenner?
How do I know I'll find him?
Yeah. You got a point there.
If I do locate him, I'll leave the other tenner with this barmaid, okay?
Let's see some color before I do any talking.
Here. Two fivers.
Good Al.
But don't forget, if you're just trying to make an easy tenner, I'll be looking for you.
Don't worry. I'll give you the right information. Just bend your ear closer. Marlowe spends a lot of his time at the casino house.
The casino house is a below street level dive. That night I was there. There was a small dance floor with two layers of tables around it. At one end, on a raised platform, was a band. The smoke was so thick and the lights turned on so low that you couldn't tell what color the walls were painted. There were some sailors, some greasy-looking civilians, three or four middle-aged businessmen. The women were just what you'd expect to see. Young kids with the wrong slant and older ones with no hope left. Except one dame. She walked over to a table in the corner a few minutes after I arrived. She was alone. I caught her eye. She looked straight back, smiled, raised her eyebrows and said a little silent something with her lips. I walked over. Like to dance?
Why not?
She got up, waited for me to take her in my arms. I did. And we danced. It was so good, we danced again. Amongst the first few things I found out was that her name was Jean. I called myself Dave. Then, because she had so much class, I asked the obvious question.
What am I doing here?
Yeah.
That goes a long way back.
I'm a good listener.
Well, it's not good manners to tell you, but I'm waiting for a man.
Boyfriend?
Once.
In love with him?
I hate him.
Then why wait for him?
I'm not sure. Perhaps I'll just spit in his face. Perhaps I'll kill him.
You know, that's funny because I'm looking for a guy, too. His name's Marlowe.
Oh, he's the one I'm waiting for.
When the dance was over, the orchestra took time out for a smoko. We went back to a table. I showed Jean my photo of Marlowe.
That's him.
Is he in town?
I've heard that he is.
You've really got something against him, haven't you?
Plenty.
Would you like to see him swing for kidnapping and murder?
I'd love it.
Then help me find him.
The best thing we can do is wait here. When he's in town, he's always here.
We waited till 2 a.m. Then the band played Goodnight Sweetheart and we were pushed out. I took Jean home in a cab.
Oh, won't you come in for a drink?
Okay. She got rid of her coat, an idea that I was very much in favor of. Then she mixed 2 drinks. Gave me 1.
Cheers.
Here's to you.
Ah. You only took a sip.
Yeah. I wanted to see if it was drugged.
Drugged?
Uh-huh.
Are you serious? Why should I want to drug your drink?
So I'd be all set up for the guy who's making noises in the next room. He came out with a gun in his hand. It was a nice entrance. He bowed, but then his knees wouldn't hold him up and he went down. I turned my gun towards Jean. She was coming at me with a vase in her right hand. I threw up my left arm, hitting her wrist. The vase went flying. I pushed her into a chair hard.
You dirty, filthy rotten...
There are a lot of words I know that aren't in the dictionary. She taught me some more. While she was rattling them off, I kept my gun on her, opened the door, and yelled for somebody to phone the cops. They came 10 minutes later. In another 20 minutes, I was at Adelaide Police Headquarters. The guy I'd killed was Marlowe. The dame was his moll. The whole thing was a well-acted trap. The cops, hours after Jean arrived, got a statement out of her. Sergeant Ellis of Homicide told me about it.
She claims she knows nothing concerning the man you call Atkinson.
But he was working with Marlowe.
The story is that she didn't know very much at all about Marlowe's activities.
She might be protecting the other guy.
That's possible. But I think she's telling the truth.
Well, that leaves the third guy free with almost $18,000 in ransom money.
If they were involved in the kidnapping.
They had to be. I told you the whole story. It all ties up.
Yeah. But unfortunately, the money hasn't been recovered. Only that can prove you're right.
Yeah. And a guy has it. A guy without a police record. A guy who... Wait a minute. The little character in the pub.
Pub?
I told him what had sent me to the casino house dive.
Describe this man you spoke to.
I did.
Skinny Finnis.
Exactly who is he?
A small-time informer, pickpocket, petty thief.
Where can I find him?
Well, I couldn't tell you his address. He lives like a gypsy. But you say you gave him £10?
Yeah.
Then if he isn't wherever it is he's now living, he'll be at one of 2 places spending it.
He gave me the name of 2 dives. I didn't wait. I went to the first of them. A yellow-faced character was thumping away at a piano, his eyes closed. Sleepy, worn-out hulks of both sexes were sitting at wooden tables. I looked them all over. Skinny wasn't there. I turned to a waitress who looked as though she'd just been to a funeral for the whole darn world.
Who are you looking for?
Skinny Finnis.
What do you want to see him for?
I'm a friend of his.
Skinny ain't got a friend.
Was he here tonight?
I don't know. I've been busy.
Uh-huh. Maybe this'll stir up your memory, huh?
Father.
Where do I find him?
Do I get that if I can tell you?
Yeah.
Well, he was here tonight.
Where did he go?
Oh, he left with a cove. Only maybe 5 minutes ago.
Where does he live?
Well, I don't know that. But wait here. I'll be right back.
She went to a table where a stumble bum was snoring. She lifted his head, shook him, asked him something. He answered. She let his head drop and came over to me, her hand out.
I can tell you now.
Here. There you are.
He lives on Peter Street, the National Residential.
What room?
First floor, left.
How do I get there?
It's just three streets straight up as you leave here. Runs same as this street.
I ran all the way. The National Residential was a dingy, tired building. Inside the hall, one weak light bulb struggled to keep the place from being pitch dark. I walked carefully up the creaky flight of stairs, wondering if I was too late. Just as I reached the landing, a door on the left opened and closed. The guy stopped when he saw me. I asked him where Skinny Fennis lived.
The door on the right.
Who lives in there?
I know.
Alone?
Yeah.
Then why don't you lock your door when you leave?
Well, you see, I...
He made a quick move for his inside coat pocket, but I grabbed it. I got his right wrist twisted.
No!
Then we moved towards the railing. His knee came out. I went back. He tried to run away. I charged. My shoulder caught him in the stomach and threw him back against the railing. I went into the room he just left, switched on the light. Skinny Fennis was there, hanging from the light fixture. The guy I'd pushed through the railing was named Parker, but before he cashed in his chips, he admitted that he'd used the name Atkinson, that he was the third man in the kidnapping deal 3.5 years before. That, with Marlowe, he'd drowned Pete Miller. The ransom money was in his apartment. Where did Skinny come into it? Well, Parker, alias Atkinson, had fixed the first half of the trap for me, baiting it with Skinny. The second half was left up to Marlowe, who supplied the dame. When Marlowe was killed, Parker figured Skinny was too dangerous. And that was that. Incidentally, I stayed in Adelaide another few days. How does it compare with Sydney? Well, what it lacks in population, it makes up for in concentration.
Well.
Good night.